the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome to another edition of the Spot Track Podcast. My name is Mike Giannetti. Monday, March 18th, NFL free agency frenzy has quieted down a little bit. So we'll do another recap today. Some updates with some contract vests, which have been flooding your Twitter sphere if you follow Spot Track on Twitter. That's what the big weekend was. A lot of contract guarantees, a lot of roster bonuses paid out, a lot of option bonuses paid out. I have tried to make note of pretty much every team's greatest hits on Twitter right now, and those have been reflected on respective player pages and team cap pages and things like that. So some dead cap updates across the league, certainly for 2024 and in some instances for 2025. I guess I have to start with Justin Fields, even though I'm assure you every other show in the world is starting with Justin Fields this morning. A couple things to get out of the way. There's a lot of people that don't understand this fifth-year option stuff just yet, and that's fine. This is the nerdy stuff that really, 19 people in the world really should follow, all right? They've got a ton of time in terms of the Steelers with this fifth-year option. I'm fascinated by it because the last time this sort of situation went on was Sam Darnold. I didn't think there was a world where Sam Darnold's fifth-year option was even a possibility. And then we saw what Carolina gave up, right? Like a second and a fourth. And at that point, you knew, well, this is not a rental. This is not a $3 million rental. They're going to pick this fifth-year option up and go from there. They did. They regretted it. They hated it. And the rest is history. Obviously see that being the case here, having given up a sixth round pick that could be a fourth round pick. It seems like this is a rental. And by the way, and there's been a few notes of this out there, it's an excellent point. This is not the NBA where you make a move or sign a player or extend a player or acquire a player, and there's some sort of restriction on what you can do with that player from a trade perspective. The Steelers can flip Justin Fields tomorrow if they so damn want to. There's not a no trade clause. There's not a trade restriction timeline. So if somebody's draft doesn't go well, if somebody's injured in training camp, which is kind of, you know, the notion we were holding the Bears to here for a while. If that happens, is Justin Fields not the best QB2 in football right now? I'd be hard pressed to find a better one, at least from an age perspective and maybe a ceiling perspective. Not to mention, if it's after training camp, there's a roster bonus that's paid out, which makes him even cheaper to be acquired at that point in time. There's an extremely real world where Pittsburgh likes what they see out of Russell Wilson over the next couple of months, would be comfortable with him, not only this year, but probably walking into 2025 as well, which leaves Justin Fields' future completely murky. You know, it's not like his position as a quarterback got any better being flipped from the Bears to the Steelers. And as we said, maybe for the past couple of weeks, I'm not sure there was a scenario where Justin Fields was going to be able to walk into a better situation for himself from a starting standpoint. It became very apparent over the past month or so that no other team in the league was going to treat Justin Fields as a starting quarterback, at least out of the gate. And that's a shame, but it's the reality of the supply that was around him. And when you factor in 3 to 6 draftable quarterbacks, maybe even more than 6, that could compete for a QB1 job, if not this year, definitely next year, the odds were just against him. And here we are. But to say that the Steelers was a great opportunity for him, and this is where he wanted to go, that's fine, because he's banking on the fact that Russell's not Russell, and that over the course of the next few months, he can win the job. And by the way, he damn well can. All right. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers, the agents, they're saying what they're saying about Russell Wilson being the starter, because that's what you do with a mid-30s future Hall of Famer who's on a minimum contract and is basically, you're basically at his mercy right now, right? This is not a situation where the Steelers have tons of leverage. This is a sensitive guy. This is an introverted guy. he's been punched in the mouth a couple times here from a career standpoint. You want to walk delicately with Russell Wilson. I get it. There is no world where he is guaranteed the first snap this season. No world. I mean, it's March 18th, right? Nobody. You've got 30 Major League Baseball teams right now who are wishy-washy on who's going to start the first game opening day in a month, in 2 weeks. You're going to tell me that Russell Wilson literally has the week one job? No. He has been handed the opportunity to win the QB1 job out of the gate. He can lose it. And Justin Fields smells blood. That's all I'm saying. However, assuming it's Russ's gig, and let's assume that Sam Darnold gets injured in Minnesota, knock on wood. Don't want to see it happen. And they didn't have a great draft, right? They don't have a player that they feel comfortable stepping in and competing for a division. Well, there you go. Okay, there you go. There's an opportunity in August or late July to flip Justin Fields, probably for something better than a sixth round pick, because now he's going to start. And the Steelers might win again, is my point. So if you're already praising the Steelers for Russell Wilson at $1.2 million and Justin Fields for a sixth, they might not be done with this thing yet, because he might be the best trade bait going in football right now. That's all I want to say about this. Other than that, it is what it is. When you're the last guy to be traded, and he was, we've got a list. You know, I'm going to run through some of the quarterback stuff here in a second. When you're the last guy to be traded, and everybody in the world knows you have to be traded, and there's not really an opportunity for that player to come in and take over the team, what else are you going to get back besides a sixth round pick? Now, you can say the Raiders offered more, or X number of teams offered, Seattle offered more. Fine. I don't know about the doing right part. You know, the Bears are on record now saying we wanted to make sure that Justin Fields was taken care of. I get it from a PR standpoint. I'm a big optics guy when it comes to this stuff, because this is a business. This is a dirty business, as we've seen over the past month or so here, obviously. So anytime you can kind of promote yourself and pump your chest up a little bit with we made an empathetic decision here for a player, do it. Right, do it and let people try to poke holes in it. But I don't know, keeping him out of the NFC was probably a part of this. The conditional fourth is probably matches what anybody else was offering. You know, maybe there was a fifth that converted to a fourth out there, maybe there was a straight fourth out there, but I get it from every angle here, and I wanted to add the angle of Pittsburgh may not be done with this. They may be holding a trade chip. They may have bought a trade chip for a sixth-round pick, and that's fascinating. Now, does the condition on the contract say that he must play 51% of the snaps for the Pittsburgh Steelers? You know what I'm saying? Because if he goes to Minnesota, if he goes to a team that needs a QB1 in August, and plays the whole damn season, well, now they've just lost a fourth round pick. Unless the language in the condition of the trade, which has not been conveyed, at least publicly, states that it must happen with Pittsburgh. Something to think about as we kind of walk through the next 6 to 8 months of the NFL season here. But it was a good landing spot for what was available. Let's put it that way. And the trade compensation is going to be poked holes in for months now, because we have Mac Jones at a sixth, and the Sam Howell trade, you know, basically got them into the top 100. And Kenny Pickett leaving Pittsburgh brought them into the top 100 with a couple of nice wiggle room late round pick swaps. So let's get to it. All right. The quarterback carousel stuff, which I didn't think was going to be a factor this offseason, right? That was supposed to be last year's gig, has really ramped up here. Now we have some guaranteed money to figure out still. A lot of these contracts are pouring in probably this morning. It was a big long weekend of kind of sitting back and figuring things out. But just with new quarterbacks, so played somewhere last year, is set to play somewhere else this year, or at least be on the roster this year. We start with Arizona, who acquired Desmond Ridder to be Kyler Murray's backup. I kind of like this one quite a bit. He is certainly not a QB1, but can he hang in the league behind a player who kind of resembles him from a stylistic standpoint for a couple of years? Sure. I mean, at least for the next 2 years at non-guaranteed 1.2, 1.4, that certainly makes sense behind a very expensive Kyler Murray. Atlanta got another wide receiver back in this one and an inaccurately used Rondale Moore, who may just be too small for this league, but he's going to go to a team now that has weapons all over the place. And he might catch 30 balls, and they may be 30 really important passes. You know what I mean? He might be that kind of player, a specialist that takes a loaded offense with a very capable quarterback now to the very next level. So we'll see. Nice player for player move. We see very little of these in the NFL, so I wanted to make sure we get that one out there. Certainly Cousins to Atlanta is the next storyline. We've talked about that quite a bit. Nothing will change except maybe the backup situation there. The Taylor Heinicke roster bonus has been paid this past weekend, which kind of makes him expensive, at least with $45 million Kirk Cousins on the roster, right? Hey, Heinicke's worth $7 million this year. And about half of that comes with base salary, which isn't guaranteed yet. So having been paid the roster bonus at least says something, but it's a contract to watch because this roster is getting expensive. Atlanta projects to have the lowest cap space in the league right now, according to our numbers. So just something to keep an eye on here. The Bills acquired Mitch Trubisky to be Josh Allen's backup again. That was 2021 coming back into 2024 and five. Cleveland brought in Jameis Winston and then just signed Tyler Huntley, which I like this quite a bit. All right. Jameis makes sense. Capable QB1 if Deshaun gets hurt. Nothing that has been done here, by the way, is going to supplant the starter anywhere. All right, anywhere. Deshaun Watson is the starter, but he's off injured. So Jameis is very capable. He knows that. That's why he chose to sign there. Probably not back with a couple other teams. The Tyler Huntley signing has nothing to do with their quarterback situation. Now, they could carry him as the QB3, and they may very well might. But to me, that's ensuring that Baltimore didn't get him back, right? That's some division rivalry shit right there. This guy has done some damage as a Baltimore Raven, at least in 1 week scenarios. Let's make him 1% weaker by throwing a minimum contract at Tyler Huntley this year. It's kind of savvy. And by the way, a lot of these Browns moves over the past few years, pretty savvy. So that's one that won't get talked about too much, but probably should be thrown into the mix quite a bit. Joe Flacco joins the Colts on what looks like a $4.5 million guarantee. This guy was signed off the couch in November and now has $4.5 million guaranteed. Play quarterback, kids, forever. Mac Jones for a sixth at Jacksonville. I don't know. I mean, Trevor Lawrence isn't going to be supplanted. He also hasn't been great. So taking a one-year flyer on Mac Jones, I guess, is just let's get a capable guy in the room, and that's it. There's no pressure on Trevor Lawrence. Let's put it that way. Gardner Minshew got $15 million fully guaranteed. Okay, and I shouldn't be surprised with quarterback contracts anymore. And Gardner Minshew definitely showed signs, but he didn't show signs of being able to do anything for 18 weeks anywhere. All right, he is a Ryan Fitzpatrick, six great weeks, and then falls off the cliff. So the fact that he's going to make $12.5 million this year and $15 million guaranteed, it's an overpay, but I guess that's what it took to get that guy in Vegas, right? Vegas had one of the better opportunities for a player to start. So Jameis, Justin Fields, many of these players that I thought were going to take a shot at starting, Kirk Cousins was aligned here for a while. All right. It's an interesting move that they chose Minshew, or that Minshew chose them. And then this contract came to what it turned out to be, which is 2 for 25 plus incentives, $15 million of that guaranteed. I still think they're going to draft somebody. So if Gardner Minshew ends up being the QB2, that's a $12.5 million, actually 1 for $15 million backup quarterback, which is double the conversation we're just talking about with Taylor Heinicke in Vegas, or excuse me, in Atlanta. So They're throwing a lot of baloney at a wall at this position, and I cannot knock them for that. I've been saying this for years, right? I've been saying this for a long time. Do too much at this position, right? We saw what happened last year. What were there, 63 quarterbacks that took a snap in the 2023 season? The backup quarterback got as powerful as it's ever been in the history of this league last season. And we're seeing that. We're seeing teams give late round picks to bring in former first rounders to be QB2s. We're seeing the Gardner Minshews of the world being added to three or four quarterbacks in the room at a really nice guarantee for a not guaranteed starting quarterback. So the reaction may be a bit of an overreaction in some instances, but I'm not sure you can overreact at this position. And that's what teams are learning, and that's what teams are saying to us out loud. There isn't too much with this. There isn't too much with a max quarterback contract, and there isn't too much with depth and smaller guarantees to players that may never see the field, but if they have to see the field, we want to make sure they know what the hell they're doing. It's a good win. It's a good win for the other 30 to 40 players at this position that aren't going to get a lot of attention until they need to get attention and are being compensated for that exact scenario. All right. Jimmy Garoppolo lands with the Rams. I don't have the numbers on this one yet. Remember, he did not make the $11 million to leave Vegas because of his looming suspension. So whatever he's going to earn from the Rams is 2 weeks without 2 weeks of pay. So I would imagine this is structured with a minimum contract salary for that purpose, because that's the compensation that will get chopped off here. And then some sort of roster signing bonus that prorates with void years to keep him behind Matthew Stafford, who, by the way, saw $10 million of his 2025 salary become fully guaranteed. So that either becomes a buyout or Stafford's here for two more seasons. And I think the latter is probably where Sean McVay's head is thinking right now. And by the way, maybe the end of Sean McVay as well. Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford may walk out of this league together. And certainly with Aaron Donald doing so, something we're going to talk about here in a second, you can start to see the writing on the wall. Cooper Kupp is getting up there. His 2025 compensation locked in this weekend as well. It may be a very clear line in the sand for this current iteration of the Los Angeles Rams after 2025. So enjoy the next two seasons with sort of the players we've come to know, because I think there could be quite a bit of turnover coming in the next couple of seasons. Sam Darnold, I mentioned it's Minnesota. That one's, you know, a placeholder for what I would assume to be a high-profile rookie, especially now that they've acquired more first-round capital to be able to move up. A lot of people are expecting them to swap with the Patriots at three and take one of the big three, whether it's Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Caleb Williams. I'm kind of in that camp. That appears to be what the plan is. Now, can they get to three? I don't know. I don't know that Arizona wants to get out of four with the Marvin Harrison Jr. price tag sitting there, but it seems like Minnesota wants to do enough to go to three, because they've got a massive, massive contract for Justin Jefferson sitting on the table, and they want to make sure they have a quarterback that can justify that contract. Let's put it that way. Drew Lock to the Giants. That, man, there's some backlash on this one. I don't know. Somebody told him he probably has a chance to start. I'll tell you that Daniel Jones' contract says he has a chance to start. I'm not sure Danny Dimes should play another snap for the Giants. And I say that begrudgingly, because I hate to do that to players. But if he's not the guy, and I think everybody kind of assumes he's not the guy, then we have to go the Russell Wilson route with this one and ensure us that 2025 salary does not lock in. Now, 25's injury guarantee only becomes fully guaranteed if he can't pass the 2025 physical. All right? If he can't pass a 2024 physical and they try to release him, things get interesting. And lawyers and agents start to come together and say, well, there's an injury guarantee in 2025 and a full guarantee in 2024, so my client should make all this money on the way out the door. You don't want to go down that road, which means he's not getting released. Now, they're coming out and saying he's the starting quarterback. It's fine, all right? But you're playing with fire, because if he re-tears that Achilles and messes up the leg even more, and we're talking about a 12 to 14 to 15-month injury, you've just now locked in 2025's compensation. So I hate to do this, and I hate to sound like Debbie Downer, but it's just not a situation the Giants should get themselves into. If this is not the quarterback, right? If you plan on drafting a quarterback right now in the top 10 and you want to give that quarterback a chance in 2025, you better protect yourself in 2024 from a financial standpoint. And that would mean Daniel Jones plays as few snaps as humanly possible from an injury standpoint. So I believe that Drew Lock has been told there's a pretty damn good chance you're playing a lot of snaps for the Giants in 2024. Now, maybe the rookie comes in and starts right away, but there's a lot of PR work, a lot of optics stuff being tossed out there with Drew Lock leaving Seattle for the Giants, because there's no question that Seattle tried to get Drew Lock back behind a very finicky Geno Smith situation. It didn't happen, and Drew Lock picked the Giants for some reason. I think we'd all be crazy to not believe that that's the reason, right? It's Daniel Jones and his injury guarantee and the contract mess and the fact that he is not going to be on this roster in 2025. Tyrod Taylor to the Jets. It only matters if Aaron Rodgers flakes out again. Hopefully not. All right, we all deserve one more great Aaron Rodgers run. This team has been constructed for him. I'm sitting here in Buffalo. I don't want the Jets to do great, but I want this thing to at least come to fruition. And I want to see 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers kind of put his magic out there one more time, and we'll see what happens. But Kenny Pickett to Philly, that was a field spot for me. This late in the game, when Howie Roseman could find value in acquiring Justin Fields, I thought for sure it was going to happen. Sounds like an offer was made. In the end, they brought in another Pennsylvania guy, did some work with an AFC team in Pittsburgh, and kind of moved back like 30 spots from the third to the fourth round to get it all done. There's some seventh round picks tossed in there, but for the most part, you get two fully guaranteed years of Kenny Pickett at, you know, bargain basement discount to back up Jalen Hurts, a player who has had injuries, right? Ankles, hands, the works. So kind of like what we've been talking about before with some of these injury prone players, Deshaun Watson, etc. You got to have somebody. And Kenny Pickett's a somebody. And by the way, Kenny Pickett is a nice fit for this situation specifically because A, there's playmakers everywhere, but B, I don't think Kenny Pickett's magic powers come with understanding an offense, going through the progressions, and knowing exactly where players should be. He's one of those Russell Wilson type players where when things break down, Kenny Pickett's at its best, which is kind of why I thought him staying behind Russell Wilson made a hell of a lot of sense. But it sounds like the politics got real ugly, right? And Kenny Pickett was told he would not be offered a chance to compete for the job. And I believe all that. You have to do that with Russell Wilson. You just have to. You have to say all the right things out loud or things can turn ugly quickly, as we've seen now, what, 3 of the past 4 seasons? So Pickett demanded out, and he's in a role. He's kind of in a very similar role with a younger QB1. Jalen Hurts loves to break plays down and loves to dance a little bit. It's why he's become so injury prone. I think Kenny Pickett can be a really nice enhancement to that as needed. That's my only point. So I think the landing spot is excellent. And Philadelphia kind of playing chess again with another situation that could become impactful in 2024. Sam Howell to Seattle. That's a pretty nice consolation prize for Drew Lock. I think the kid showed a lot on a roster that has been defunct for quite a while now in Washington. You put him around some playmakers as needed, and I think this kid can roll some weeks for you for sure. So they kept Tyler Lockett. They kept everybody important out there. Brought back Noah Fant as a tight end option. There's an offensive line that's starting to develop at least. So Sam Howell to Seattle makes a ton of sense for me, and I had him pegged as Aaron Rodgers' backup at one point in time, certainly to the Giants with that Daniel Jones situation. But Seattle's a nice landing spot for Sam Howell, and there were certainly some draft picks involved going back and forth there, as we've made note on Twitter. And then the only other one I'll talk about is Marcus Mariota, who's the only rostered quarterback in Washington right now. So you know what's coming. It's either a massive move up to number one to get Caleb Williams, or they're going to take the next best available quarterback at number two. And for the most part, that player is going to start. I spoke to some people in Washington. We don't have the Mariota contract just yet, but it is the understanding that Mariota's $6 million is fully guaranteed. So he's right there with Heineke and all these players we've been talking about, Jameis Winston, as certainly capable QB2s who are going to be behind a young quarterback and have to kind of treat their offseason accordingly. But that's Washington is showing us what they're doing out loud. All right, we're spending aggressively, we're acquiring aggressively, and we're setting ourselves up to be as compliant as possible for a rookie quarterback. I still think they're a year away from a roster construction standpoint, from really being able to compete in this division that isn't as strong as it has been. Let's put it that way, right? The NFC East is going to be one of those, I don't know, highly primetime televised, but maybe not great divisions over the next year or two. We'll see what Washington can do, because there's a chance they can really push themselves to the top of this thing quickly if they pick the right quarterback in the upcoming draft. Aaron Donald has retired. Let's finish on this, because he deserves it. I can't stop watching clips of this guy, both from an on-field standpoint and as kind of a leader on the sideline. Kind of a quiet retirement, but he threatened to do this last year. You can tell it's been in his brain for a while now. Certainly they didn't have the 2023, the walk-off that he wanted, but he did. All right. He was just as good as ever. So he gets to walk away from this thing without us ever having to say, man, he's declined ever. All right. 10 full seasons, all in the Rams organization, started the first two in St. Louis, of course. Comes over from here, makes himself $170 million. And the reason it's $170 million is because of the dead cap on this contract. Remember, this is basically a fully guaranteed three-year $95 million contract. That's what he had been walking away from here. This was going to be year three of it. This was going to be his contract year. There was a roster bonus. There was an option bonus. There was a lot going on here. He was carrying a high cap hit. He was carrying a cap hit near $27 million. And the dead cap on this thing was basically right there. All right? $27 million. So if he sets to retire, all right? They got to take it all on at once. So what happened is the Rams converted most of his compensation, like $14 million. That's roster bonus, and that's all of his base salary down to the minimum, into a signing bonus, handed to him out the door before his retirement, another $13.8 million, and said, now you can announce the retirement. We'll keep you on the books till June. Split this thing up over this year and next year. It works a little better for us, and we're happy to hand you with a $14 million parting gift. That's how the last couple of weeks have gone for Aaron Donald and the Rams, who have obviously known this was going to happen and figured out the best way from a business standpoint and from a how the hell do they keep this quiet standpoint? Nobody keeps this quiet. Jason Kelsey's came out. Everybody's gift comes out, right? Somebody breaks the news. So kudos to the Rams, who have done this for years and years and years now as a core unit, of treating this as professionally as humanly possible with the contract restructure, the bonus payout, and allowing him to dictate his own retirement, which is just the best. So to me, this is a hell of a walk away for a hell of a player. It's $170 million earned over the past 10 seasons. You can do the math on that yourself. And the dead cap, not too terrible for this and next year for the Rams. Certainly something they can pallet with the increased salary caps from the leagues as well. All right. I am updating the reality check piece in terms of NFL free agency every single day. So whenever one of these top 30, top 40 contracts become available to us and we see the full breakdown, I'll go back into this piece. I'll update the actual verbiage to tell you, all right, you know, Leonard Williams is a 2 for $48, not a 3 for $64. And I'll tell you why. I'm not just putting objective notations into this, right? I'm telling you that the guarantee structure says this. There's reasons they can get out of it after this. It's still likely that Calvin Ridley gets 2 years, even though they can make this a one-year gigantic deal. I'm trying to make this as user-friendly as humanly possible, because not that the agents and, you know, the Schefters of the world are doing a bad job in reporting it. They're not. They're doing their job, all right? The agent's job is to report the biggest, best, boldest, shiniest numbers they can possibly report that could exist if everything in the world possibly goes right for their client. That's fine. And the Schefters of the world are being asked by those agents to report those numbers as a good gesture, right? And Schefter's going to do that to keep the relationship with the agent, so that he gets the numbers immediately texted to him as quickly as possible. And I'm just not that guy. Okay. I'm that guy. I've got plenty of relationship with agents, and I can get the numbers as I need to. But I'm also the kind of the villain in this thing, and that's fine because I am the devil in the details devil. That's what I am. And I'm happy to be it. All right. We have invented the potential outline. It's stamped on every single NFL contract out there. It is not objective for the most part. There are some where I'm taking liberties and saying, yeah, the dead cap says this guy gets a third year, even though the guarantees only last 2 years. But for the most part, it is just reading the contract, understanding the guarantees, knowing what dates exist so that teams can get out at certain times of the offseason, and literally drawing the line in the contract to say, definitely locked in above, could be fluffy below. And not that agents don't respect it, they just don't like it being out there. They want the big numbers to exist, and they miss the old days when the big numbers were the numbers. Both things can exist, all right? Kirk Cousins can be a 4-for-180 and a 2-for-100 at the same time. He is. That's what he is. All right. The reality check piece on spotrat.com is where I try to spell this out as much as possible with any contract at $30 million or more in total value. That's kind of like my threshold right now. So we're going to start to pile up a few more here as well as some of this third wave free agency kicks in. Keith Smith is back on the NBA contract world. 10 best value contracts on the books right now in the NBA. So you may have heard about some terrible contracts. You may have heard about some great contracts, some huge contracts, right? But every time the Celtics play, they talk about Jaylen Brown's $300 million contract. How about the ones that kind of sit in the middle somewhere, all right? Or maybe ones that were terrible contracts because of how big they were last year that have now become pretty darn good contracts. Keith's got 10 of them on spotrat.com, and they're pretty nice names, definitely names you've heard of in big markets. And he gives you his reasoning and some actual teams that collectively belong on this list as value, not just individual contracts. It's a great piece, as per usual, from Keith Smith. And plenty more to come. All right, the Dallas Cowboys have been quiet. I know that's driving people up the freaking wall. They have done a small cap conversion on Dak Prescott. I expect a massive extension for Dak Prescott to come in the next week. And then we start talking about CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons right behind that. So the quiet spells out of Dallas aren't going to last forever, I promise you. And we will certainly focus on the Chargers very soon as well, who have traded Keenan Allen, released Mike Williams, and done massive renegotiations on both Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. And we will dive into all this. I'm kind of waiting to see where they fill in the blanks, right? What kind of wide receiver do they bring in? What kind of running back do they bring in? It may have to take, we have to wait till the draft to do a full recap on the Chargers. But this new regime is coming in. And as we thought, there was going to be a lot of carnage. It didn't raise to the level I thought it would. I thought for sure one of Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack was going to be off this roster. I was positive Keenan Allen was going to move. I told you last week on Thursday, I had the 49ers kind of earmarked for that one. And certainly Mike Williams with his injury history was going to be a factor as well. We'll do a recap on this whole process because that's the team that really has had to flip themselves on the fly. And the reason that we're focusing on them isn't so much what they're doing, but what they're doing with a massive quarterback contract. Okay. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there whining about how they wasted the Herbert years. They made a concerted effort financially and from a construction standpoint to win ball games, to win Super Bowls with Justin Herbert at value. It just didn't happen. Okay. Injuries, coaching, whatever you want to blame it on. So it's a bummer it didn't happen. It doesn't mean that their window is shut closed. It just means they're going to have to rebuild on the fly quickly and intelligently. And that's going to involve draft picks. So we'll see if this new regime can kind of turn the corner quickly. Possibly at the end of April here, but I do expect some sort of mini rush of signings, value signings coming in that could plug some of these holes and at least fill some of the blanks that they just maybe added by subtraction over the past 2 weeks. Plenty more NFL stuff, plenty more NBA stuff as the regular season winds down there. Just 14 games left for a lot of these teams in the NBA, so it's almost postseason time and then offseason time, which is Keith Smith's wheelhouse, of course. And then, of course, opening day in baseball, just two weeks away. We still have some notable free agents. The talk is at least starting to pick up a little bit. And we will finalize opening day payrolls and tax payrolls and have a nice big discussion about that with Cousin Dan coming up as well. For Scott Allen, my name is Mike Gennetti. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Spot Track Podcast.